Namaste. So there is a very interesting word in English, and it is called as in Hindi, and you will see it's something similar in English also. And the word is rit. So we have rit, ritam, satyam, ritam, brahatam. So these three go together. Satyam is truth. Truth here is not my truth, my perception, your perception. But it is truth which is the foundation of creation. This is the thing about spiritual life, that at the foundation of it there is truth. Unlike what some doctrines believe, that the foundation of world is desire or falsehood. But no, that is not the foundation of the world. Foundation is always truth. The second is rit. Now when we speak about foundation of truth, but this world is full of many, many, many objects, beings, people, forces. So everything has to be arranged according to a law of truth. This law of truth is rit. And the third is vriyatam, vast. So this aspect of rit is very fascinating, because without understanding rit, when we understand only satyam and vriyatam, we can land up into confusion. Everything has its own law. And in English, the word which corresponds to rit very interestingly is rhythm. Everything must be according to its rhythm. And in the ancient times, people respected this. So if you really look at it, they saw a rhythm in day and night. So, and this we can actually ourselves experience. See the thoughts that come during day, the thoughts that come at night, the kind of impulsions. So one can see that there is a place given to everybody. So night is a time when all these nishachars are active, because they have to do the destructive processes. And that's why nature puts us to sleep physically. And if you really look at the body during the time of sleep, I mean, good that people don't know it mostly, but when we read as doctors physiology, it is frightening. Because just to know that your eyes are moving at a tremendous speed, automatically, not that you are trying to move. And it's called as REM movement. It's like if you really were to actually see it, it can be very frightening. So it's, and all the body processes are going through a disturbed rhythms. Because that's a time. Now why this disturbance is allowed, why the night is allowed, because you can reset. It's like computer, you go off to sleep or you reset the rhythm. So all these are decided by a deeper wisdom in nature. So there is a rhythm of day and night. There is a rhythm of movements which is mapped by the stars. So this was the whole idea of all this Ekadashi, this good time, bad time. It was to go by the rhythm, the cosmic rhythms. So nobody knows the cosmic rhythms except through the movement of the stars. So there was also the idea of earthly rhythms, which we see in the form of seasons. And we can learn a lot just from these rhythms. For instance, many of us, there are often, people feel like that, oh, I've been meditating for 2 months and I don't have a glimpse of God. Now you look at nature. There is a season for everything. And sometimes you have to wait for years before the first shoot can come out. That's the story about the bamboo, that for many years you have to wait before it comes. But when it comes, it grows very fast. And even then, you can use it either as a stick or as a flute. That's to use it as a flute, you have to become hollow. So there is a rhythm for everything. And if we can respect this season, then it's in a way good for the whole being. So that's why we had the in India, this whole idea of the Varna Ashramas, not only Varna Ashrama, but the four stages of life. So the first, taking an average lifespan of 100 years, first 25 years was meant for laying the foundation, Brahmacharya. Brahmacharya is not just a sexual control, but Brahmacharya is about, first 14, 15, 16 years. Now puberty has become much faster. But otherwise, anyways, first 15, 16, 17 years, people don't know about, you know, what is what. But more importantly, it is being focused towards a great goal. So that is brahmacharya. It's becoming one pointed towards something great, towards something higher, truer, more beautiful. So this was the task of the teacher, to lay the foundation of dharma. During that period, you have to lay the foundation of dharma. What is dharma? So all that a child must know. Till he goes into the world, he must have very clear idea about what is dharma, what is adharma. So it's not just about that he gets a good job. Very often you will see schools taking out a list. So many children got 99.9%. So many children, you know, they got into IITs and medicine first shot. But what they are going to do, that the schools don't publicize. Maybe they will, end up scalping people for money. So the foundation of dharma, first season of life is all about preparing the soil, putting in it the seeds of dharma. Next season is when it will grow and there will be fruits and flowers. So that is the grahastha ashram. So it extends to 50 average. So grahastha, graha, you hold things. So that's the time you are holding things. What are you holding? You may hold a house. Not your own house, but you have a house. You take care of the house. You have family, so you hold the family. That's why it's called as a householder. And you'll be very surprised. There is a letter of Sri Aurobindo when he comes to Pondicherry. I think this letter is, of course, this is before the mother's final coming. That's for sure. And when he is asked that, you know, what kind of sadhana he is engaged in and why don't you come out and tell the world? He says, if I come out, nobody will understand me. The kind of yoga I am engaged in, that too as a grahastha, as a householder. Now, where is the householder, Sri Aurobindo? He is an ascetic of ascetics, but that's how he describes himself. Many other things besides. He says, nobody will understand. So that's a period of time when as householders, we own things, they are in our name and we are, you know, looking after it, doing it beautiful, etc., etc. So we are getting experience of the world, contact with the world, we grow in strength, we grow in manhood. All this is part of the world experience. In general, Sri Aurobindo did not really favor very young age people coming to ashram. There are letters like that. Because when you come very early as an adolescent, all your conflicts and vital nature is very prominent and it tends to, you know, take over. And it's not easy, particularly here because there is a pressure of sadhana. Pressure of the force which will uncover everything. Outside things get in a certain way released. But nevertheless, this used to be the way things were. What it is now that we'll talk about a little later. That is the grahastha ashram. Then around 50, when you have had the contact and the experience with the world, next step is that now you want what is beyond these limits. The framework, the social framework, the religious framework, the moral framework, the framework of house, family, etc. So that's when you have the Vanaprastha Ashram, 50 to 75. And that's what can be called as, in a way, aging gracefully. So, it's a thing which people don't know. And a lot of confusion is because of that. I often give this example. Most mother-in-laws and father-in-laws, and there's so much confusion in the house because still their leg is dangling in the grave. They still want to hold the money and the property. Even if they have written a will, they keep it safe. Why? Because there is lack of trust. My child will not look after me. All these things. Whereas actually this is the time when you have to gradually start dissociating from the outer material life contingencies which have entrenched us and move towards things which are higher. So Vanaprastha literally meant where you are engaged in deeper pursuits. So in those days it was like, okay, you travel to the forest where you have hermitages, ashramas, sages and seers with whom you meet, learn. You are still a grahastha, but you are slowly moving towards higher things. And then at 75, when it is moksha sannyas, where you are completely engaged in liberation. Now, of course, that meant that there is a rhythm of life which we must appreciate. And many people don't know how to age gracefully. For instance, if you really look at it, in the first season of life, the base is on the bodily life and the life force. First and second season. Strength of the body, the vital also, vitality. Then in the third and fourth season, the stress is on the mind and the intellectual and the psychic parts, spiritual parts. But many times you will see, even in 50s, 60s, people are trying to, you know, look good and, look sometimes, you know, very strange. It's an image people believe. But you can't keep an image, no, because it's easily seen. Even at 70, 75, 80, you want to look good for impressing. It is perfectly fine to be healthy. Nothing wrong in being healthy. You must be healthy always. But this urge, still the Deh Atmabodh, where there is a lot of time, energy being invested only on the looks and the bodily life, whereas the spiritual and the intellectual life is not really cared for. So this is the whole idea of this idea of rhythm and season. Things must be in their true place. Now what happened is, over a period of time, this got disturbed. Because life has an urge to escape from every framework. It wants to go higher. So now what we see is that those rhythms are broken. Because a new arrangement has to come up. Like Chaturvarna, that got broken. So now it is evolving into a newer, not just a frame, but in a very vast, subtle and plastic way of life. Also because of the new forces which are acting. So for instance, the idea of aging is tending to go away from the human mind. That is the other problem, which was very strong in, if you look at just about a generation before, at least in India, this was very prominent, that after 60, you are a retired person. So this had its own disadvantage also. You are a retired person, and a retired person has to live life like a retired person. Whereas, at least my contact with the West, I was very surprised when I came to know that somebody at 42, 43 has enrolled in a school of medicine. So I asked, what do you mean by medicine? Yes, I'll study medicine. We can't imagine that. 16, 17, 20, 25, then you are already past the age. By 25, you have to get married. So now things are changing. In another context, you can get not just married, remarried, sometimes first married. 50, 55, people do that. Now that's because the old rhythms have gone. This doesn't mean this is the perfect rhythm. It means that there is something new which is going to come, and that new will not be determined by any outer framework, but from the inner need of the soul. This is the new thing which is going to come up. And that one has to see very clearly. When otherwise we just hold on to the things which are of the past. Even in collective life, new rhythms will come up. So when mother was asked by one of Dr. Vishveshwar Iyer, he was here, he was in General Hospital, very fine human being, and in care. He lived in up to 95 or something like that. Avid reader. So when I asked him, he was himself sharing. He said that, you know, when I asked the mother, "Mother, I am not able to do now anything." So she said, "No, no, no. When you cannot do anything outwardly, you can do the real thing. Very few people can do that. So what is that real thing? You can invoke, call." So then he understood that, you know, this is the time when I have to engage in another kind of activity. So he said, "Now I do that." So if you really look at that way, when we had have a good foundation, when we had a good contact with the world, and we have not shrunk from the world, when we have faced it with all its challenges, then we are ready for something deeper, inner and higher. And that's the season when we must be engaged in that. And that's what we see even in the collective life of humanity at a given point of time. Wherever this was not practiced, we will see the youngsters in olden times with kings. You will see all the sons came and they either imprisoned the father or killed him. Because this idea was not there, that coronate, the sun, and then you lead a life of quiet. This is something very beautiful I see in Ramayana. That have you ever thought why Dasaratha had a need to coronate Rama? He was still alive. And the same thing you'll see in Mahabharata, which was the cause of a lot of conflict. This coronation was that now I am kind of withdrawn. He is the person who takes care of the whole kingdom. So that was, so in any case, respecting the seasons is very important. And the mother puts it in this way, that there is a right season for plucking the fruit and eating it. And we must understand that whatever seed we sow today, we are talking right now of good efforts, not in the karmic law, will bear its fruit at some point of time. But this won't be immediate. In fact, the higher we are aspiring, the longer it is going to take. Because the preparation of nature has to be that much. So seasons don't end with one life. Seasons continue through lives. So there is a whole life sometimes which is spent only in preparation. When Sri Aurobindo was asked why some people immediately, as soon as they come, very soon they have spiritual experiences. Why is it so? So he said, because they have spent a life previously in sadhana and the siddhi was to come now. So we must understand that this season is not just, even illness and health is according to rhythms. Be very surprised if you observe yourself, you will see that there are periods when you are prone to illnesses, then it vanishes, and then there is a healthy period. Now people try to chart it according to the stars. But for everything, life and death, again there is a season. There is a time when there is a very strong possibility of death. And if you overpass that time, then again there is a smooth period. So it's because the forces, death is what? Death is a change. So basically when we face that kind of challenge, it means that life is crying for change. So what people do mostly, they change their outer lifestyle, they change outer things, which is okay. But the real change is that we need to change ourselves. And if we can do that, then we bypass that moment. And then we have to once again go through that new rhythms of life. So life is like that. It renews itself and comes out with new things. That's the beauty of life. So that is about seasons, rhythms and rit. Things should be in the right space and time. This was very much, even with regard to dealings with people, you can't treat everybody as the same. Even when we give things to people, when we take things from people, it should not be indiscriminate. You can't just give anything to anyone. You can't take anything from anyone. So this whole idea of rit, the right arrangement of things, basically it means this right arrangement of things according to the law of truth. And if we respect it, and now the time is when each one has to discover it within. And if we respect it, it is wonderful. If we don't respect it, don't heed its call, then life becomes very difficult. Okay, namaste. Namaste. So the question is how to handle the vrittis if they rise up at a young age on the surface. See, you want to establish peace, calm equanimity, and you are relatively young. And many instincts, anger can come up, sexual instincts can come up, many kinds of fear may come up. So how to handle them? So first thing to remember is keep on establishing the basis which is positive basis for sadhana. So keep on striving towards peace, equanimity, endurance. When these things will come, maybe there will be a little deviation for a while, but get back to that. As Sri Aurobindo said to Nirodha very beautifully, if you fall, don't lament. Don't get into guilt. Don't get into, I'm going to fight this and root this out. Because we have read, he tore desire up from its bleeding roots and offered the vacant place to the gods. It comes in Savitri at the last stage of transformation. It's the outer nature. Now this is one of the ways that our resistance of nature try to prevent us from going forward. By catching us. And it's a small thing, by focusing it become very big. And with guilt, depression, I am unfit, all these suggestions can come in. So while they will come, but the way to handle these vrittis is best learnt by watching the mongoose and the snake. So Sri Aurobindo, of course, has written about it in his inimitable style in an essay titled The Process of Evolution. So he says when a vritti comes up, it has to run its course. And he speaks about, and the mother speaks about illness. He says, when an illness is, you can prevent, but the moment it comes into the body, it runs its course. You can't stop it. So you can shorten the course. It will go through what may have taken, 2 weeks may take much shorter. But it will go through its course. So with the vritti which comes into the nature, you try to suppress it, doesn't work. That's what the Gita says. That how will coercion help? So Gita doesn't say that, you can't change your nature. But yes, it says that you can't coerce and forcibly try to do that to your nature because your nature will bounce back. That's how it explains to Arjuna that, look, you're a Kshatriya, your nature will compel you to fight. So don't try an unnatural thing. So that's what Sri Krishna cautions Arjuna. So when a vritti enters into the nature, then it will take its course of evolution. So what we have to apply there is sanyama. We try to finish it. The more you try to finish it, the more it rises to the surface. Paradoxically, because the inconscient is infinite. Its support is coming from there. It is not like it's a small little tendency. There is a whole dark universe which is supporting it. And that will keep on. It's like, if you see I don't know whether you have ever been engaged in any of these quarrels with these local gunda and all that. Or a local contractor. Nice person, he will look. But he has the backing of terrible people. And if you think that, he is doing things to me, I am going to take him. So then you will start getting the pressure from all kinds of people. Because he is backed by that. So these vrittis are backed by much darker things than we can imagine. And if you start fighting them to finish them in the beginning, it is very difficult. So apply sanyama. When you apply sanyama, after a while they tend to become weak. And that's the time you have to apply nigraha. So this is how Sri Aurobindo explains. So this is the mongoose and snake. If you ever watch, what does the mongoose do? Mongoose never really, it never really attacks that way a snake. Because it cannot. It keeps on tiring the snake. So snake thinks it can beat it. And just when the snake is about to, it knows how to escape. So escape from certain vrittis to an extent, like staying busy, keeping your mind and body preoccupied, anger issues, do a lot of physical workout. So slowly you will see that they are not able to really take hold. When do these forces come? Sexuality, particularly boredom. No work, one is sitting idle. So sexuality will come up. Anger, when there is no real physical workout and all that, they will come up. But if you are busy, then many of these things don't have time to come up. It's like they are trying to hit you, but the mongoose is just escaping them. And after a while, they become mild. Partly because when we are young, the vital is very prominent. But as we enter into the different season of life, that's why the old time, that seasons of life, the vital becomes relatively weaker. Or it turns into other pursuits. So that is the time when the vital is relatively weaker, when the snake is tired. That's when you will see that the mongoose taking the leap and tearing the snake to pieces. Watch it, it's very fascinating. How a mongoose beats a snake. One bite and it can be killed. Of course, mongoose has some kind of antidote also within the body. But that's not what protects it. It's the swiftness with which it escapes the attack. So the moment you get to know that there is a tendency which is going to come, that's the time you have to, like for instance, mother says, if an impulse is rising in nature, so we may accede to that impulse or we may realize, oh, this impulse is coming. And then you just turn your mind away. It will come. And one has to be clear that it's not about good or bad. So they will come. The moment they come, that's the time one has to turn the mind away. Or, if you have a lot of work as such, your mind will be occupied. Or do something which will take it away. Maybe read a book if, it's later part of the night. Involve yourself with some nice activity. Or even a nice program, interesting program. So these impulses have the tendency that they'll rise like this, and then if you don't really give way, they tend to drop, literally like a snake. And then they rise again. Again, you don't take note. Still, sometimes, one does succumb. So one has to understand that, it's part of nature. Separate yourself. So after a period of time, and this will lead to alternations of day and night. Whether you have done sadhana in previous life or not, it will happen that even when the psychic has been blossoming beautifully, these moments of clouding will come. They come to the best, strongest, because it's nature. And nature has everything. But the important thing is to remember that, yes, that's the truth that I have seen. Not to identify with this field. Not to say, I am a sinner, I am a useless person, I am horrible. No, not to say that. But to look upon things as movements of nature, separate from them, and then keep putting the pressure of the light to change them. If you try to uproot them, that is the path of sannyasa. But to change them. For instance, if there is love which is born in the human heart, what shape does it take initially? Very sentimental form in many people. And then there is easy hurt. It is, certain desires get associated with it, mixed up, and all this takes place. So what do? Some people take this key, human love is all bad, and they turn away. So what happens? They turn away. After some time, the fellow comes up again. And then you say that, I did it again. And then after some time, oops, I did it again. So it continues. But if you take it that, this is a tendency or this is a movement of nature, let me purify it. So let me learn to love unselfishly. So it's an opportunity. Because what it is seeking, why is that part of nature knocking at the door? Because it seeks its own, it says, ki you are soul, it tells the soul, wonderful for you. You are living in the divine presence. But look at where I am, suffering and struggling. So it has to be assisted in the process. It's some people, some parts will take longer. Everybody has some part which takes longer. Not like in some. Some parts are very easy in some people, very difficult in others. So we have to also understand, develop a great generosity and sunny tolerance towards others. The more we deal with our own difficulties, the more we realize it's not so easy. One difficulty within us may be easy, but we may see difficulty in others, but it is the other way around also. The other person may see in us a certain difficulty which is not in that person. So that's why the rule is focus on your own issues, but don't get into unnatural all the time struggle. Focus more and more on the positive side. And that's one thing, these classes and all activities, which if you see the ashram life, so beautifully it is organized like that. Nowhere you will see that work starts early, except the ashram. And so you start early. So because if the work has to start early, you have to sleep early in time. And then you get up early. Like earlier it was like 6 o'clock mother's balcony darshan. So you want to attend, you want to go there, you are impelled by the psychic movement. So the whole thing starts early. Then you have a certain routine in which you get into. Then 6 hours of work or whatever, 6-8 hours, whatever work, it's not like a fixed timing is now, but it should be a joy of work. Then you have physical activity, and then you have classes, evening classes, right from then. So what happens is whole day you have something or the other with variety. What happens outside, you have only one type of work. You are in a job. So you may be working for 7 hours, 8 hours. And the job's aim is money. Everybody surrounding you is all about money. So that's a very, as such, you are getting contaminated with all kinds of things. Here the work is not for money, not for promotion. Neither you are being paid extra, nor you are getting an extra promotion. I mean, some people get into that groove, some chair they want to occupy, but basically there is nothing if you look at it. So it's a beautiful arrangement. So all that is already taken away. Outside, people work for 8 hours. In that sense, ashram offers something very wonderful. 8 hours, 9 hours. It's all about money. Even when you have a good, you are a good human being, still the whole thing is about money. And after that, when you come back, you are too tired for anything. You're sapped out. You have neither the time nor this thing, either for physical exercise or for developing the other sides of nature. So what happens when you come back? You are either a couch potato, there is boredom. In that state of boredom, all kinds of things will come up. So the ashram life has been organized. There is one big advantage of ashram life, that it has been organized by the mother in such a way that if you really get into its rhythm, even a basic rhythm, then many things in life can be avoided. The difficulties, because the snake is there trying to hit you, but mongoose is all the time mother, 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 mother. It is not even looking at the snake. So it doesn't have the time to hit as hard. That's the whole logic. So this is the process. In each one it will take place differently. Namaste.